When the people saw the sign that he had done, they began to say, "This is indeed the prophet who has come into the world." When Jesus realized that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, he withdrew again to the mountain by himself. When evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, got into a boat, and started across the sea to Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. The sea became rough because of a strong wind was blowing. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and coming near the boat, and they were terrified. But he said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." Then they wanted to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat reached the land which they were going.
Good evening. It's great to be here with you this evening. For those who don't know, I'm Simon. I'm the youth worker here. I've been here since the beginning of September. There's one other person nodding because he's got a great name of Simon as well. It is my first time preaching here, so it's quite exciting for me as well. Now, I do have some slides, if we could... Never mind. We'll wait. We'll get them in a second. What I wanted to do first is, if you could, oh, there it is. If you could chat to the people next to you, what do you think of when someone says miracles, or if someone tells you a story that has something miraculous in it? What sort of thoughts are conjured up with that? Have a chat to the people next to you or around your table, or if you prefer to just ponder on your own, then that's fine. It's fine, don't worry. I'll... Okay, if you could draw your conversations to a close, I'm sure you could go on for much longer. Sounds like some of you are, so. Now, in John chapter 6, it's a chapter with many, many miracles in it, many things that are might be at first glance really hard to take in. At the beginning of John chapter 6, Jesus feeds 5,000. And in fact, they only record the number of men there. So it was possibly more like up to 20,000 people that he fed with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And as we just heard read, Jesus then goes water skiing without a boat. And then at the end, it sounds like they even might be teleporting it thrown in. We're not sure with the wording there. But John chapter 6 is a chapter with many miracles, but as hopefully we'll see, there's lots in it to help us in the everyday life, the things that we might find monotonous even. Now, I want you to think for a moment. Do you have a friend who is really good at disappearing? Maybe at a party, they suddenly fade into the background. They were there 1 minute, and then they're gone. I have a friend like this. At one moment, he can be the absolute life of the party, and then all of a sudden, he's just gone. He's gone into another room. He's gone somewhere quieter. And in some extreme cases, he's just left. Yeah. But he disappears. Now, this is where we find Jesus in the beginning of this story. Jesus has slipped away. Now, Jesus didn't slip away because he was an introvert, although we don't know whether he was or he wasn't, and that's not a bad thing. And he hadn't slipped away because he was antisocial. He'd slipped away because he knew people's heart, it says in John's Gospel. He knew what was making the people tick. Now, he just fed up to 20,000 people, and now that's pretty amazing. They wanted to make him a king. I don't know whether making him a king based on how full they are is a good decision, but they wanted to make Jesus a king. Now, Jesus being king doesn't sound like a bad thing for them to want. That seems like something that's quite a good motive. They'd kind of equated Jesus with some Old Testament prophecy. They liked what he was doing. They thought at the very least he was a prophet from God. Jesus being king is possibly a good thing. But you see, their view of Jesus was totally inadequate. Their view of Jesus was truly limited. It wasn't that their view was wrong necessarily, but they weren't looking for the fullness of what was on offer from Jesus. The people there wanted freedom and peace. They were ruled by the Romans, who weren't the kindest people we know from history. And sometimes the poorer people were a little bit downtrodden possibly as well. So there was real feelings of wanting to rise up and to overthrow the establishment. And this man, Jesus, had come along who did some great things and could make a really great fish sandwich as well. So they wanted to make Jesus a king. But it was in a very specific time and place. They were trying to put Jesus, they were trying to put God into a box. You see, Jesus was going to bring freedom and peace, but Jesus did and is going to do it for all time, everywhere. He's going to bring freedom and peace for all time and everywhere. And it wouldn't have necessarily have been a very good idea to make Jesus a king, because it would have caused a coup, and not the baby cooing, but a uprising against, let's face it, in the Romans, one of the most effective armies that there's ever been. And that doesn't sound like something the Prince of Peace would have wanted to do. So Jesus slips away. He knew their motives, and it wasn't quite adequate enough for what he was going to accomplish. So he slips away. And I kind of imagine them going, yes, Jesus is going to do this. Jesus is going to lead like this. Jesus is going to institute this policy. And someone all of a sudden going, where's Jesus? You know, he just disappears. And the disciples, then we see, just seem to go and get into the boat. They almost doesn't seem like they give Jesus a second thought. But the disciples go and get into a boat. Now, I have a slight confession, I guess. As a younger boy, I was, let's call it, mischievous. Maybe a lot mischievous. But I used to live in a village, just the other side of Bath is where I grew up. And down the lane from where I lived, there was a river. And on this river was a weir. And my friend and I thought it would be a really, really clever idea to take his inflatable dinghy over this weir. Now, to be fair, it was quite fun. Up until the moment that we got caught in a fast-flowing part of the river. And then we're there with just one paddle, so it was like going around in circles, trying to paddle against the really fast flow. We were trying to paddle against the full force of water coming over this weir. And we struggled for quite a while. I've no idea how long we were there struggling. But to no avail. We didn't get back towards land or up towards the river or Weir or anything like that. And in fact, to cut a long story short, we completely lost his boat. It went down the river. We never saw it again. And we were both soaked and had to go home and confess to our parents all that we'd done. But we were trying to paddle up against the flow. Now, for those of you who don't know, Galilee is, the Sea of Galilee is has hills all around it, and the wind can blow down the side of the hill across the lake, so I've heard, I've never been, but blow across the lake and kind of whips up the sea as it goes across. This is actually a picture from Galilee, so you can get some idea of what the wind can do rushing across it. Do you know, when I Googled pictures of storm on Galilee, apparently lots of preachers don't use actual pictures of Galilee. There's just lots of pictures of rough seas that they try to fob their congregations off with. But this one is legitimately Galilee that I found. You can see the buildings with the hills on the side and the sea rushing, the wind rushing across it. And this is where the disciples were. And they were rowing really hard. They were going against the flow, like my friend and I were trying to get back up the Weir, but these guys were trying to row into the wind across a massive lake. And they'd set off in like evening time, and we know from Matthew's gospel that it's roughly about 3 a.m. at the point of the story with Jesus coming towards them. So they've been going at this for hours, and they're kind of maybe just past the middle. Maybe the land on the other side is tangibly close, but they're not quite getting there. And John kind of captures the mood for me, and he says, "It was dark." You know, it's a miserable night. They're struggling against the wind. They're soaked from the spray. Their spirits are low. Their heads down. They're just trying to go for it. They're probably quite fatigued at this point. It's just absolutely tough. And this is where the disciples are. But enter Jesus. He comes to them walking on the water. There's one of the miracles for you. He comes to them walking on the water and they're petrified. I think that's a pretty reasonable reaction to have if you are very fatigued, you've been struggling all night, and this figure comes across walking on the water. I think it's a natural reaction to have. In fact, in Matthew's gospel again, it tells us that they think it's a ghost. But Jesus, that's a bit small, sorry. Jesus says these words, "It is I, don't be afraid. It is I, don't be afraid." Now, the Bible that some of you have got open, that book isn't about you. That book isn't about me. The Bible is about God. It's about God's mission. It's about God's love. It's about God's grace. And the Gospels are about God becoming a person and giving everything of himself for us. The Gospels are primarily telling the story of Jesus. There is lots in it that affects us, a lot's in it that applies to us, but our starting point is Jesus. I often feel with the story of the walking on the water, we jump too quickly to the disciples in the boat. They're going through a really tough time. Or we jump too quickly in Matthew's gospel of Peter getting out the boat. We must have faith like this. And they're both legitimate things. But the story is first and foremost about Jesus. And he says, "It is I, don't be afraid." In John chapter 6, so I read, is there are many echoes of the Exodus story. The story of the children of Israel who are in slavery, and through signs and miracles, God liberates them to freedom. John is deliberately making parallels with this story. And the people who were there and the people who first read this passage would have understood that in a way that we don't quite grasp straight away. But you see, when the people of Israel had been liberated by God, they weren't immediately in this amazing place. They were in the wilderness, and they started to complain that they were hungry, and God miraculously provided food for them. In John chapter 6, at the beginning, Jesus had fed 20,000 people roughly. And later on in John chapter 6, he says, I am the bread of life. To the people there, they would have known very clearly that he is saying, I'm equating myself with this miracle of people being freed. I'm equating myself with this miracle of people being liberated. And in fact, they would have seen him as maybe saying that he was trumping this miracle. He was fulfilling this miracle. He was greater almost than this miracle. That he was some way replacing it is how they would have viewed. And then Jesus comes walking on the water. Now, the children of Israel had come to the Red Sea, and this huge body of water that was totally impassable for however many people had escaped from Egypt. But God parts the sea, and they're able to walk through. And now Jesus, in John chapter 6, comes to them. He doesn't even need to part the sea. He just goes on top of it. But again, John is equating Jesus with the story of Exodus and equating Jesus with bringing freedom. In a Jewish culture, the sea and large bodies of water were viewed with suspicion, which is interesting for fishermen, I guess. But that the sea was associated with chaos and evil. So again, Jesus walking over the top of it is a picture of him taming the chaos and evil. You see, John's trying to say, it's not coming up, but John's trying to say that Jesus is bringing freedom. Jesus is offering freedom to people in a new way. Not just in a way that people can be liberated from the Romans, not just so that they can be liberated from literal slavery, but he can offer them freedom physically, emotionally, spiritually. Jesus gives freedom. There are little other nuances in John chapter 6 that link it to the Exodus story, but I'm going to leave that to you to go home and look up yourself. So there's some homework there for you. So Jesus brings freedom. And Jesus, walking towards the disciples, says this amazing phrase, it is I, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid is all very well to say, much harder to do. As we discussed, they'd be very, very tired and naturally quite afraid if a figure's walking across the water to them. But Jesus says to them, don't be afraid. You see, Jesus also brings peace. He says, don't be afraid. Jesus brings freedom and Jesus brings peace. Now, in your little groups again, think about what does peace mean to you? Or what would peace in your life look like, do you think? Off you go. Just 30 more seconds on that. Okay. There is a day when Jesus is going to bring peace for all time everywhere, and he's going to bring freedom for all time everywhere. But we can still have peace now, even though things seem to go wrong. And I would like to suggest that peace isn't necessarily peace isn't the absence of problems, it's about the presence of Jesus. And that might sound a little bit controversial, but peace isn't the absence of problems, it's the presence of Jesus. Can we have the next slide, please? The Apostle Paul, I believe, talks about this. In Philippians chapter 4, Paul writes to lots of churches across Asia and Europe. And when he writes to Philippi in Greece, he says this: "And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus." Now, in the passage just before this, Paul writes that he's really encouraging the people in the church to go forward in their faith, including it in their daily lives. And he exhorts them to have joy and not to be anxious. And he says finish that little section up, to have peace that surpasses understanding, goes beyond anything that we can understand. And the amazing thing for me about this is, Paul is writing this from prison. He's got chains maybe around his wrist, chained to a guard not day and night, might even have chains around his ankles, it's a bit sore. He's stiff because it's a cold, damp room. He's got sores from staying in one place too long maybe. He's not in a comfortable situation whatsoever. The guy's got some real problems going on. He's got some issues there. But he can still write very comfortably to Christians to have joy, to not be anxious, and that they can have peace. And he isn't writing this to tell them that's what they should do, but he's suffering in prison. This is something he deeply, deeply believes. We can have peace despite our problems if we have the presence of Jesus. So Jesus gives us freedom and peace. But what does that mean for us? Because we can, even though the Bible is predominantly about God and it's about the life of Jesus, there are things that apply to us, things that we can take away from them. Does this situation sound familiar to you? You've made a decision and it's something you're quite comfortable with, an issue you're quite good on, and a little while later, it all starts to go wrong. And you say, "Why, Lord?" or "Help me, Lord." And at that point, God intervenes and says, "Oh, now you want to include me in this. Now we haven't chatted for a while, but now you want to include me in this." I think that's where the disciples were. There's no mention that they look for Jesus when he's disappeared. There's no mention that they wanted Jesus in the boat. There's no mention that might be going a little bit too far, but there's no mention of thinking about Jesus in any way at all. And John describes their situation as dark. It was dark for them physically, It was dark for them emotionally. Maybe in that moment, they'd just seen all those people fed. But maybe for them in that moment, it was also dark spiritually. We often get things happen in our lives that are dark, or we feel like they're dark. We feel like we're going against the flow. We feel like our everyday situations are overcoming us, and these amazing miracles we read about in the Bible seem very detached from what's going on in our lives. The things like illness, sadness, debt, stress, all these things sound far removed from freedom and peace. And it's hard for us to join those things up. But if I could give a little bit of testimony for a moment. Many of you might know that my wife's in hospital at the moment. We're expecting our second baby, but to cut a long story short, she's having to be observed at the moment. And for me, going through this passage has been a breath of fresh air. I'm a fairly relaxed person, and so don't really get super stressed about much. But it has been quite hard work. I have had my in-laws staying with me for quite a long time, so they're not here, it's fine. No, that's a joke. I love them very much. But having to make trips to Southmead every day and make sure our first son is looked after, there's been a lot going on for me, it's felt like. But I've been trying to seek the presence of Jesus. I've been trying to seek the peace and the freedom that he offers. You see, when the disciples welcomed Jesus into the boat, in their situation, the wind dies down, and suddenly, in John records it, it's as if they appear at the shore, potential teleporting. And it's all amazing for them. But something that's also kept me going is that, actually, when the children of Israel left Egypt, they were still in a wilderness, but they were free. The Apostle Paul was in prison, but he knew peace. We can experience the peace and the freedom that Jesus has to offer by seeking the deep relationship that is on offer from him. Like any relationship, it needs to be maintained. We need to talk to him. We need to listen to him. We need to communicate. We need to tell him how we feel. We need to take on board all that he has for us. You see, Jesus offers freedom and peace for us. And whatever situation is going on for you, whether good or bad, it doesn't have to be bad. We should include Jesus. We should include that presence of Jesus in our good situations too. But we can remember this comforting words of Jesus. It is I, do not be afraid. Let's just take a moment of reflection. When we were praying beforehand, one of the words that we felt God was saying was that for somebody, it literally feels like the seas are rough, but Jesus is offering calm seas. And if that applies to you, then please find someone to pray with afterwards. But just reflect on where you can accept the presence of Jesus and receive the peace and freedom that he offers. Lord, I thank you that what you have for us is bigger than we can possibly imagine. I thank you that you offer us freedom and peace, Lord. I thank you that one day there will be full freedom and peace for all time, everywhere, Lord. I pray that we wouldn't put you in a box. I pray that we would seek your tangible presence, Lord. In this week, in this month, in the years ahead, Lord, that we would seek you and grow close to you. That even when life is rough, even when we feel like we're going against the flow, we would know your peace that passes all understanding. In Jesus' name, amen.
Sorry. Thanks. Yeah. Cool. Apparently, I wasn't switched on. Yeah, great. Thanks. Yeah. Brilliant. Oh, it's quite heavy, is it, Oak? I'm going to try and get people to sort of come around this side. So we'll just, if it's okay, move these lanterns behind here to give them more room to get past and not trip up. That's great. Cool.